pulling that out of his butt. We're beating around the bush. Jennifer O'Neill, she was a beauty. Yeah, she did some modeling, but I've been known to be simple-minded. You know, we're looking for table scraps. Be sensible. Don't panic.
We have got a fantastic Ira Kaufman podcast for you today, presented by Bill Curry Ford, Tampa's first family of Ford. You can start shopping right now at BillCurryFord.com. General Manager Sean Sullivan will take care of you personally. He will give you a Joe Bucks Fan Ira Kaufman podcast discount. And do not forget their nationwide lifetime warranty on new and pre-owned vehicles. Today's episode is a special one. Ira is on fire. All the big Bucks decisions are heating up. It's coming to that time. We are all very excited. And we thank you for listening to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Podbean, Google Play, Stitcher, and right there at joebucksfan.com. Subscribe for a free alert. And that lets you know when the podcast has dropped, because we put new ones out all different times. And later in this podcast, you will hear from D. Orlando Ledbetter. About an 18-20 minute interview with him at the NFL Scouting Combine. He gives a lot of great insight into the Hall of Fame and Ira himself, and we put him on the spot for that. We did not ask him in advance what he was going to say. Very interesting stuff. Gives you a little bit on the state of the Falcons and free agency, and he reveals some interesting stuff about Dirk Cutter as well as Raheem Morris, who are both working for the Falcons. So don't forget that later in the podcast. Now, Pin Chasers, you want to get there. That is where you bowl in the Tampa Bay area, and that is also where you can send your kids to camp next week during spring break. Get to pinchasers.net for all kinds of information. You can reserve a lane, shoes are always free, and their daily specials run every day, sometimes twice a day. Tuesday, which is tonight, that is the Pizza Bowl. Unlimited bowling, unlimited pizza for a stretch of time. Get all the details at pinchasers.net. We're big fans of them there. And they've always got drink specials and weekend fun and Sunday morning breakfast bowl, pinchasers.net. All right, here is the sage of Tampa Bay sports. This is a good one. You do not want to miss this podcast. Free agency, we are fired up for it. Enjoy.
Now, Lee, beer drinkers must try Big Storm Beer, the official beer of the Ira Kaufman podcast. The Tropic Pressure Florida Ale, that's a winner, Lee.
Yeah, it is.
And so is the original Big Storm Beer, the Wave Maker Amber Ale. Lee, there's not an ale down there that you haven't tried. And don't forget the Brumosa, the Tangerine IPA, and the Fancy Orange Can. You tried that too, haven't you?
Oh, it's good stuff. I mean, you drink that, you just think Florida. It's man, Florida, man.
The great food and locally brewed Big Storm beer will be flowing at the JoeBucksFan.com Big Storm Draft Party for round one of the NFL Draft. We got the date. It's Thursday, April 23rd. The Big Storm Tap Room on 49th Street in Clearwater. I've been there. It's a little south of Omerton, just off Omerton. Mm-hmm. The fun starts at 6 o'clock, Lee. I'll be there all night having a blast with Buck fans. I always do. I think I'm going to wear the Sage t-shirt, Lee. This is the can't-miss party of the year, as always. I got to tell you, fans are going crazy over this thing. Javier usually comes in from Panama. Of course, we got Port Richie Lou from a local.
He's
standpoint.
All worked up, ready to rock and roll.
And look, we're 6 weeks out. This is a very, very popular event. Find all the Big Storm beers at bigstormbrewery.com.
I hope Outlaw shows up. I hope the OKC boys show up. I haven't heard from them in a while, and they're good guys. And I hope they all show up.
I don't think Brent Grimes is showing up this year, Lee.
Or
like
Miko.
He did a couple of, or Miko.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we've arrived once again at favorite time of the week at JoeBucksFan.com for another exciting podcast with the King of Newport, Richie, the Sage of Tampa Bay Sports, the Custodian of Canton. It's Uncle Ira. Ira Kaufman. Ira, how are you surviving this pandemic known as the coronavirus?
Forget about the coronavirus. I'm worried about the free agent virus.
Oh, I thought you were going to say quarterback virus.
No, we are 1 week away from one of the most momentous weeks in recent franchise history for your little Tampa Bay Bucks.
Are people going to have to stock up on hand sanitizer as a result?
Publix is only going to give you two at a time.
Yeah.
Two tissues. I went in there for toilet paper. They looked at me and said, you can have six. I didn't take it personally. Now, this free agency thing. See, it took you a while to get that one. This thing is fascinating. I mean, this quarterback carousel, nobody knows what the hell's going on. Brady, can you give us a clue? Everybody's weighing in. Brady here, Brady there. The Chargers, the Bucks, the Colts, you know, everybody and their brother. The Raiders, you know, is there a team that hasn't been linked to Mr. Tom Brady? Except for my beloved Chiefs. The 49ers. The 49ers, and people are trying to read in, you know, hey Lynch, can't you say something about Garoppolo? That you're going to keep him? He's our guy? Crickets, Lee. Crickets. So where there's crickets and silence, just like we got about Winston, speculation grows like a coronavirus.
Well, Mike Florio.
The dean.
Dean. Well, I don't know about his dean, but the curator, creator, and overall guru of ProFootballTalk.com. One of my favorite lines he's ever had. He's got many lines. He's a frustrated comedian at times, Mike is. But one of his favorite lines about silence with the NFL, silence invites speculation.
There you go.
So I know for a fact NFL teams don't like speculation. And I had a guy tell me one time, I'm not going to give anything away. Guy was giving me crap. Like, oh, you're making things up. And I dropped that on him. I said, silence invites speculation. You could stop it. Only thing you got to do is go on the record and it's all over. He wouldn't do that.
I mean, you could tell at Indy a couple weeks ago, Lee, when you were there. And you were front and center, right in front of Jason Light at the podium. He didn't know what to say.
The poor guy.
He didn't know how far he could say anything. He didn't say anything. Arians is an open book, up to a point. But he breached some protocol by throwing Brady's name out. Yeah, you're not supposed to do that.
Not supposed to, but it was great.
You read the transcripts of all 31 other coaches. Not a freaking word about Brady by name. They don't talk about. They say, oh, we can't talk about particular names. That doesn't stop Bruce Arians. Doesn't absolutely.
Well, you know who pried that out of him?
Mr. Isbitz?
Yeah.
Nicely done.
He said, can you, you know, you talk about door number two. Who's the quarterback behind door number two you'd want? He goes, Tom Brady.
Yeah, he didn't even hesitate. Now,
no.
Lee, we're all trying to read the tea leaves about Mr. Winston and the Bucs situation. You know, we're looking for table scraps and relying on our instincts. And I wouldn't say this was inadvertent, but a former Buck icon who happens to be in the Ring of Honor might have spilled the beans. Because you mentioned just a little bit, we didn't really get into it, Lee, but when Rondé Barber talks, Lee, it's an informed opinion.
Very much so.
He's at one Buck place all the time. He did a lot of Buck games last year, but even when he's not doing the Buck game that Sunday, he's around.
Mm-hmm.
And
he's in Light's kitchen cabinet.
He's observing the players, especially the secondary. And why wouldn't you want Rondé Barber weighing in on Sean Murphy Bunting and Dean and Davis and Edwards and, you know, Whitehead and guys like that? You'd be foolish because, Lee, and I said this before, and I'm not coming in late to the party here. When Rondé was in his prime, and his prime lasted a hell of a long time, when he was in his prime, I called him, and I'm sticking with it, the smartest football player in the NFL. And that's when Peyton Manning was at his peak.
That's saying a lot, but he was very intelligent.
Nobody broke film down like Rondé Barber. And I still think...
Not even Brooks.
Wow. I still think, although Rondé sometimes disagrees with me, by NFL standards, he was an average athlete. Maybe a little better than average. Nothing exceptional in terms of his measurements, his speed. Now, for the average guy, he's a phenomenal athlete.
Now, I've heard Belichick rave about Ed Reed's intelligence.
Yes, and I think Ed Reed was one of Belichick's favorite players that didn't play for him. But, you know, we're beating around the bush. Rondé Barber weighed in, Lee. Why don't you tell the listeners what he said, and then we'll hash it out a little bit.
Well, he said a couple things, and the one that really jumps out is the way he talked about it. Jameis is a goner, it sounded like. You know, Rondé was saying, hey, the biggest upgrade the Bucs can make is that quarterback. There's so many options. And, yeah, there's options.
He's not pulling that out of his butt.
Exactly. What we're just talking about. He's, as you just said, an informed opinion, an informed source.
And he hangs around with Arians, too, and he's very close to Arians.
Well, he's very close to Arians because he's known him literally all his life. I mean, Rondé's dad was Arians' roommate at Virginia Tech.
And he's got nothing against Jameis Winston personally. This is not
personal. No, he wants Jameis to succeed because he wants the Bucs to succeed. And everybody knows if Jameis is successful, there's a very good chance the Bucs are successful.
Look, as we sit here a week before free agency, is there a chance Winston's back under center? Sure there is for the Bucs.
What do you think?
Sure
50-50?
There is. I think it's less than 50-50.
Now, less, okay.
Some people think we're reading way too much into Arians' lack of support for Winston and Indy. You were a little taken back by it.
A little bit, but Arians did say this. I think we brought it up in a previous podcast. Arians was asked, so you can't win with Jameis? He goes, hell yeah, I can win with Jameis. Well, what's the circus for then, if that's the case? That threw me off more than anything.
Lee, this could be a little simple-minded, but I've been known to be simple-minded.
But you tell me.
I think this was telling. Of all the things he said, I think the fact that it happened at the end of the season, when he thinks the arrows should continue to go up, and during the four-game winning streak, he was playing well, playing winning football. All signs pointed to him coming back. With 2 weeks left, you and I would have put the meter at 90%. I would have. And I said it before, Arians was shaken up.
You hit the nail on the head.
He was shaken up.
He was shaken. I wrote this on JoeBucksFan.com once or twice. The last game, Matt Gay was awful. Over three, field goal.
You could make a strong argument he lost that game.
You make a very strong argument. He makes one of those field goals. That game doesn't go to overtime. And the last play of the season is not on everybody's mind, that pick six. They win that. Terry Bradshaw told me this at the Super Bowl. He goes, I threw interceptions like Jameis. Only difference was we won, and people weren't on my case because we won. He goes, they're on Jameis's case because they're not winning. And I think that sums it up.
Speaking of that pick six, I taped the show with the great Derek Brooks last week.
Fresh from the Oval Office.
He didn't want to talk about it too much. Not too much. But, of course, we did a free agency show. And, of course, Winston's front and center. And we know that Derek bleeds Seminole.
Yeah.
And we did a whole segment on Cam Akers. He loves Cam Akers.
Wow.
He really does. But we talked about Winston. And this is coming from Brooks. Another informed opinion.
Very much so.
And he was talking more about the fans than Arians, but I think it applies to both entities. How do you like that one? Entities.
Lee. Entities.
He said, from a fan perspective, people can't get that last pass out of their mind. They can't.
Understand.
They can't erase that last pass.
Yeah, it's understandable. Yeah.
It hovers over everything. It's coloring everything about the way you look at number three. Is that unfair?
Maybe. Perception. It's the last thing. And by the way, I hear some people... Believe it or not, I want Jameis to be here. You know that. But I'm not going to make excuses for the guy.
For any clown who says that you have not been supportive of Jameis Winston through the 5 years, that's somebody who's never listened to a podcast.
I want him to succeed. I think he's the best quarterback the Bucs ever had, but I'm not his mouthpiece either. If he screws up, he screws up. I'm going to say it. Based on that, some people, not me, are, Jameis was hurt. He had a bum knee. He had a broken thumb. That doesn't wash with me. If you're that hurt, you shouldn't be on the field. If you're that hurt that you're torpedoing your team with your rotten play because of your injuries, that's on you, pal. That's selfish, and you should get off the field. I love the fact that he's on the field. He's fighting through it. No one would not like that. That's great. But if you're hurting your team because you're trying to prove how tough you are, that's on you, and you should get off the field. But again, I love the fact that he's trying to fight through it. But I don't buy the injury part. If he's that injured, he shouldn't have been playing. I believe the LASIK is blown so out of proportion. I will give him some credit, for lack of a better word. Arians said he can't read a scoreboard. And Jameis,
he ain't missing nothing in the last 5 years. He ain't missed a thing.
He threw for 5,100 yards. Come on. And he was the best NFL deep passer. So give me a break. But when Arians said he can't read the scoreboard, if I remember correctly, didn't Jameis lead the league in delay of games? Maybe he couldn't read the game clock or the play clock. I'll give him that.
There's another aspect of the Winston conundrum. I'm throwing in all kinds of words for you.
Dilemma.
And it's undeniable. There's a financial aspect to all this.
Oh, of course.
Of course. Now, look, some things we don't know, some things we do know. What we do know is what the franchise tag for Jameis Winston would cost the Bucs.
$26, $27 million.
Some of the names, not all of them, some of the names that people are using as a fallback position, if Winston moves on, are not going to command $27 million. Lee, I'm sorry. I saw a story that Bridgewater wants $30 million. That's preposterous. That's absolutely preposterous. Nobody's giving Bridgewater $30
million. He shouldn't. It only takes one,
He hasn't merited that kind of money. He doesn't have that kind of body of work.
Yes, body of work, exactly.
He doesn't have the body of
work.
Yeah,
he's got some pieces there.
Andy Dalton, whatever you think of him, he ain't making $27 million.
You see what Dak Prescott reportedly turned down?
Ryan Tannehill's not making $27 million.
I wouldn't think so. But you know what? What we consider overpaid today is 2 years from now, bargain basement. Salaries never go down. They never go down. I'll just give you an example. If 2 years ago, you'd say, give Dak Prescott $33 million, people.
Are you nuts?
He just turned down $33 million, reportedly.
Wow.
So, like I said, what is allegedly expensive today in 2 or 3 years is a bargain basement deal. So I don't get too worked up about the salary. And if this, you know, this CBA, which has been delayed again, and I find it to be utterly boring, I don't care about it. But allegedly, if that gets passed, you're going to have even more money to spend under the cap. So,
and it also has effect on how many tags teams will have.
So Jameis, easily, if that CBA is passed this next week when they vote on it, $27 million won't really be people won't be screaming in the streets like Independence Day, you know, when the monsters came.
You know, Lee, speaking of money, the word that always accompanies
War of the Worlds. It's not Independence Day. War of the Worlds.
War of the Worlds. Lee, the word that should accompany money with free agency is value. You want value.
Oh, sure. Who
You'll pay if you get the good value.
Yeah.
And that brings me right over to Bill Curry Ford. You know, Lee, I got to tell you, Buck fans, March Mania savings, they're in full swing right now at Bill Curry Ford. I got my cherry red 2020 Ford Escape. Lee, you've seen it. Gleaming, the sunlight gleaming off the hood. I got it from General Manager Sean Sullivan at Bill Curry Ford. He's ready to personally help all Joe Bucks fan readers and podcast listeners. He'll even give you an Ira Kaufman podcast discount. How about that, Lee? Can you ask for more than that? What really matters at Bill Curry Ford is the great attention you'll get from a true family-owned dealership. Lee, what do we call it? Concierge service, my friend. They're Tampa Bay's first family of Ford, and their nationwide lifetime warranty on new and used vehicles is very impressive. Start shopping now at BillCurryFord.com or visit the Bill Curry Showroom on Dale Mabry Highway. It's a mile north of the stadium. I wonder if Bradley Pinion can kick a punt from the stadium to Bill Curry Ford.
What do you think? Be close.
And he better not land on my cherry red Ford Escape. I can tell you that right now.
Have you pulled the stoplight yet? Nice day, nice sunny spring day in Florida. And, you know, got the windows down. You pull up at the red light. There's some hot babe in the lane next to you. Do you kick the gas a couple times? Try to impress her?
Well, it's certainly a head turner over there, DeKemper. Then she turns the head, she sees what's driving it, and then turns back the other way. But I do get the head turn. It's a nice vehicle, my friend. It is an absolute nice vehicle.
You know, back to Rondi. When he did this interview, you know, he was talking about the Bucks, of course, and about quarterbacks. He thought Carr and Bridgewater would be excellent options. Excellent options. Your take on, well, first Carr.
Well, Carr has to be shaken loose from the Raiders and Chucky. And Lee, knowing Mr. Gruden, like I do.
Yeah, you do.
And by the way, and this is a true story. And I think it was the 2002 season, right away it started. I used to call, you know, say once a month at about 6 o'clock at night. I'd be finishing up next to Roy Cummings in the Buck trailer. And I had a cell phone number. I'd call him. This is an old one Buck. I'd call him and I'd say, hey, I'm coming over in 5 minutes. And he goes, I'm busy. I said, never mind that. I knock on his door. 5 minutes later, I come into the war room, you know.
Oh, wow.
He's studying film, but those were some great sessions. But we know what he's like. And the classic line came from Jeff Garcia. And it was during the period that the Bucks were courting Brett Favre.
Courting.
The summer of 2008.
Wasn't there a play or a movie?
That's when Jeff Garcia said Gruden doesn't fall in love with quarterbacks. He just likes to date them. That's what he said.
I know, I was being sarcastic with the movie. And
yeah.
There was like a summer of 49 or whatever.
Summer of 42. Jennifer O'Neill, she was a beauty. She was a beauty.
Oh, yeah, she was.
Yeah, she was the one. So she never made it after that. That was her one big Rushwood fame. Yeah, she did some modeling or whatever.
No, she
didn't. You know, you have a poster, I understand.
No, but she did a movie with Kiefer Sutherland's father. What's his face? Crazy.
Oh, Kiefer Sutherland's father? Not Martin Sheen's?
No. Sutherland, what's his name?
Oh, Donald Sutherland. That nut job?
She did a movie. Yeah, nut job. She did a movie with Donald Sutherland. It was quite memorable.
Well, I'll leave it there. They didn't have a love scene. She could do better than Donald Sutherland.
She got paid for it.
Yeah, she got paid for it. So,
Look, she pranced around the beaches of the Bahamas.
This is my long way of saying, you know, Gruden always thinks he can do better under center. He does. He certainly felt that way about Jeff Garcia. He probably felt that way about Brad Johnson, even after he won him a Super Bowl with him. So why should he feel any different about Derek Carr?
Well,
Carr is a decent quarterback. He's not great, but he's decent.
Yeah.
Doesn't throw a lot of picks.
You know, I've always said he's a wild card out there. You know, everybody's looking for a new quarterback.
He's not old. Not old.
No. He's what, a year older than Jameis?
So I think it's predicated on Gruden landing a Brady, maybe a Rivers. I think those are the only two guys that he would dump Carr for, I think. I don't think he'd dump him for Cam Newton.
Not Bridgewater?
I don't think so.
Not Tannehill?
I don't think so.
Because I can't remember who I read on Twitter this morning that it might have been Daniel Jeremiah. That Jeremiah was saying Tannehill, he could see Chucky all over Tannehill.
Now, Lee, unlike Bridgewater and unlike Tannehill, Carr's on the contract. You'd have to make a trade for him.
Well, Michael Lombardi...
Unless they release him.
Yeah, unless they release him. Michael Lombardi said his contract, you know, the former Browns general manager, former gopher for Belichick and Walsh and Al Davis, he said that Carr's contract is easily tradable. Easily. And he's
not going to command a first-round pick.
No. Lombardi's come out two or three times already and flat out stated Derek Carr will not be the Las Vegas Raiders starting quarterback. He's come flat out.
I think this move to Vegas doesn't help Carr's status, you know, in terms of making a splash. I think they want to make a splash, including the owner.
You know what one quarterback would be a major splash in Las Vegas? And depending who you talk to, Chucky's either in love with him or Winston. Won't have anything to do with him. Yeah, Jameis. Now, Chris Sims says that's a bad marriage. Sims said Chucky would love his upside, but he'd go nuts about the picks. Who knows? But I could. Let's put this.
I don't know if Winston could handle Gruden in his face every game.
He handled Jimbo Fisher all the time in his face. Allegedly, he handled Arians. Arians said he got into it with him. But here's the
thing. I didn't see it on the sidelines.
No, not on the sidelines. Not behind the scenes, though. Yeah. Hypothetically, he goes to the Raiders. Raiders' first year in Las Vegas. Chucky's there, big star,
and we're gonna be there because the Bucks are going.
No, of course. Chucky and Jameis hitting Las Vegas will be the biggest thing to hit that desert oasis since Sinatra and Rickles were at the Sands.
And you were there on the front row. I happen to have seen Sinatra, not in Vegas.
Did you?
But not in Vegas. But I've seen him
in New York.
My brother's a huge Sinatra fan.
Really?
And speaking of my older brother, Barry, we shared a little 2x4 room growing up in Brooklyn. No air conditioning, Mr. DeKemper. You come from the lap of luxury over
there. No, I grew up with no air conditioning.
No air conditioning. We didn't even have a car until Barry turned 17 and got a Dodge Dart. So I want to do a shout out because today is my brother's 70th birthday.
Wow.
70, my friend. They're staying down in Bradenton Beach. He's got the family down there with him in Holmes Beach. I went down there yesterday. I bought him 3 gifts.
Big Storm beer.
He loves them. He loves the gifts. He opened them up yesterday. You
Big
ready?
Big Storm beer.
A DVD, History of the Oakland Raiders.
Oh, really?
Yeah, 2 DVDs, all the crazy characters, Otis Sistrunk.
Villapiano.
Yeah, Villapiano, you know, Jack Tatum. So he loved that one. Second one, the Frank Sinatra Reader. Everything that people have written about the chairman of the board over there. He's a Sinatra freak. And the third one was called Dynasty's End. The 69 Celtics and the end of the Bill Russell dynasty. Now, they went on to win a lot more titles, but that was it for Bill Russell. And who does he beat his final year when he was the player coach?
Will Chamberlain's
Lakers. Will Chamberlain's Lakers.
Oh, Lakers, okay.
Yeah. Game 7. That was a very famous Game 7, Lee. What happened in the fourth quarter of Game 7 in L.A.?
Chamberlain fouled out?
Chamberlain hurt his knee with about 10 minutes left and the Lakers down by 10. They put in a gangly 7-foot center named Mel Counts. All of a sudden, the Lakers start coming back. They got within a point. 5 minutes left. The coach was Bill Van Bredikoff.
Huh?
He coached Bill Bradley at Princeton.
Okay.
Bradley was one of the all-time great college players. And Wilt saunters down and stands in front of Van Bredikoff and says, "I'm good to go, coach. Put me back in." And Van Bredikoff looked at him in front of all the Lakers and said, we're playing better without you. Sit down.
Wow.
And he never put him back in. And the Lakers lost the game by 2 or 3 points.
Wow.
Next season, Van Bredekoff fired. Wilt got him fired.
Wow. Yeah. Well, I can tell you this, and we'll get off the old-time
NBA. We'll get off the NBA.
My first memory of NBA, and my dad and I were sitting on the couch watching. It was on ABC. It might have been the Lakers and Celtics, because I want to say it was Lakers and Celtics. It was NBA Finals, black and white, grainy TV.
Maybe Chris Schenkel, perhaps?
No. Keith Jackson.
Keith Jackson. What year you think that might have been?
Might have been 69.
Okay.
I want to say late 60s. Keith Jackson was the voice.
Now, last thing I'll say about the NBA, and we'll get off it, but one guy that Bill Russell had tremendous respect for as an opponent, and he was on those Laker teams. And Russell
Jerry West?
Russell kept beating him every freaking year. Jerry West.
Yeah.
Jerry West. You know, people don't realize till Magic Johnson and Michael Jordan came along, the NBA all-time backcourt was obvious. Nobody argued with it. It was Oscar Robertson and Jerry West.
The Big O.
And Jerry West was the logo of the NBA, right?
Yeah.
He was the logo. Now, speaking of logos, let's get back to Jameis Winston over here. Is he the Buck logo, or is he a forlorn former logo?
You know, we're going to find out. Who knows?
We're about to find out, Lee.
So
hold on. I wrote a column, Lee, and
you haven't read it yet,
but I don't mind ramping the pressure up on Jason Light, because in the words of John Gruden, you either feel pressure or you exert pressure. And now's the time for Light to exert pressure. He has a chance, Lee, with the help of Arians, who a lot of people think are running the show, and you know, there's a lot to be said for that. Certainly in terms of what they're doing at quarterback. But overall, in terms of talking JPP to come back and not test free agency, same thing with Sue, because it's obvious Arians wants him back. Light's got a job to do. And he's got to do some heavy lifting before the draft, Lee. And if he retains some of these free agents, figures out what to do under center, and then signs one or two agents. Are you listening, Mr. Kenyon Drake? We got a spot for you right here in Tampa. If he does that, Lee, I think the Bucks have a chance to go into the draft without an unbelievably pressing need, which most teams have a pressing need. And you've heard the phrase, best available player, best available athlete. That'd be a beautiful thing if the Bucks could do that at number 14, regardless of position.
Really?
I think so.
You'd draft a wide receiver at 14?
No, there's about three positions they're not drafting.
Okay.
Wide receiver, tight end.
Yeah.
Not my first round. I don't think they're drafting a running back at 14. Do you?
No, it doesn't sound like Arians.
Is Jonathan Taylor good enough to go at 14?
Dude,
you like him.
That's
you like
stretch.
Him.
I like him. You know what?
You like Dobbins.
Well, I'll tell you what. You sort of reference this in your column. There are two running backs I like. One's a free agent. One's going to be a rookie. One is Kenyon Drake. Why? Why am I impressed with that guy? He played with a terrible offensive line. You know, people always whining about
excellent
the
point.
Line.
Excellent
always whining
point.
About the offensive line. But he got a job done. That's one guy.
And he can catch the ball.
Yes, he's well-rounded. Another guy I like, he'll be a rookie. He's in the draft for the very same reason. Cam Akers. Florida State's offensive line was atrocious. They were horrible.
Solid points, Lee. And he produced.
I love Dobbins with Ohio State. But I noticed the other night that when I watch highlights of him, he's always got a hole run through as wide as this table is. Well, you know what? If you got a hole that wide, anybody can run through it. You and I can run through it. What about yards after contact? What about getting hit behind the line? What do you do when those holes aren't there? I don't know about that with Dobbins. I haven't seen that much tape. I can't make that kind of judgment. With Akers, you know. With Kenyon Drake, you know. And that's what I like about those two guys, because they have shown they can produce despite adversity.
You're not trying to suggest the Buck offensive line is not the 76 Oakland Raiders, are you?
No, but I also know.
But I'm sure
I also know they're not the 2014 Buccaneers either.
With Anthony Collins at left tackle.
Anthony Collins and O'Neal Cousins and Garrett Gilkey.
That's brutal.
That was a bad offensive line.
I can't imagine you remembering all those names.
Oh, it was. I can't forget. It was so horrible.
You know, Lee, I've been thinking of a crazy X factor. Now, maybe there's a 5% chance that it's happening. But you got to plan for contingencies, Mr.
You
Light.
You better, yeah.
So listen to me.
Now look.
There's a chance. And I said 5%. There's a chance. One of these quarterbacks beyond Burrow and Tua. Beyond, I'm not saying those two. But suppose Hebert's there at 14.
Mm.
Do you look at? Do you consider him? Sort of like look at him?
Sort of like an offer you can't refuse kind of thing?
Suppose this Jordan Love is there.
You know, first off, what have they graded him out to be, him being Jordan Love? You know, Jordan Love, from what I can read, is all over the map, depending who you talk to. He's either another Josh Freeman.
He's a boomer bust.
Or he's another Ben Roethlisberger. You know, you don't know.
It all depends on Arians looks at him, right?
That's the key point right there. Now, you know.
But does it matter what the Bucks have in terms of what they've done in free agency, whether you want one of those two guys? In
which one of those guys?
Suppose you get Bridgewater, and now a young quarterback isn't as much of a priority because Bridgewater's fairly young.
Well, here's what I would do, but I'm not Arians and I'm not Light. If you're dead set, you got to move on from James. I would get one of these quarterbacks in free agency. Brady, Rivers, probably Rivers. I would get Rivers, and I'd draft a quarterback first round. Arians all but said he's not going to do that now, saying and doing different things. We don't know if that was misdirection.
And we don't know who's going to be on the board at 14. We don't know.
True. And so, but me personally, that's what I would do. I would draft Jordan Love, and I would sign Rivers. Real quick about Bridgewater. You know, Rondi Barber was talking about Bridgewater being an excellent option. Your take on Bridgewater. Forget the salary.
I like him, but I don't like him in this offense. So the question is, are you going to change the offense if you get Teddy Bridgewater? Accurate passer, good decision maker, winner. You like all those intangibles. Nobody ever accused him of being a deep ball thrower, Lee. And as
far
as I know,
and you mentioned
Arians,
it for some reason.
You know, with Carson Palmer and Jameis, I mean, they're better fits for Arians. Not with 30 interceptions.
Yeah,
well,
of course.
You know what I mean.
You bring up a very interesting point. I wrote about that Monday morning on JoeBucksFan.com. Albert Breer, you know him, SI.com. He is super. I dare say he may have usurped Peter King as the insider in the NFL. This guy's got
serious. He's strong in New England, right? He's strong.
Very strong. And he said, Brady and Bridgewater simply don't fit Arians' offense. However,
there was a however in
there's it? A big however, and I wrote about this however. He said, however, it's pretty clear, and I think you and I, Ira, will agree with this. It's pretty clear that part of the reason, not the main reason, part of the reason Arians came back to coaching, came with the Bucks, he wants to help his buddies get head coaching jobs.
It's a key point. It's a key point.
So Breer threw this out. Let's say Arians signs Brady, or signs Bridgewater. Is that a way for Arians to go to Leftwich and say, look, you mold an offense around these guys. It'll be your offense. Everybody calls it my offense. This will be your offense. And obviously, if you do any good, you're going to be in line to get a head coaching job.
Wow, that's a big further step, Lee. I mean, it's one thing to give Leftwich the keys to the play calling. It's another to let him design the whole offense. Now, I don't think anybody is saying that Leftwich designed the 2019 Buck offense.
No, if he did, no one gives him credit for that.
You know, because it looked a lot like Arians' previous offense.
Yeah.
That's why. It's a very interesting point, Lee. The idea being, if the Bucks should win 10 games and go to the playoffs, Leftwich is in line for a job.
Yeah, he's a miracle worker.
A miracle worker, and Arians would be the one beating the band for him to get these interviews.
Sure.
You know, followed by Bowles and Goodwin.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the big three, I think, that he's pushing.
Now, here's one for you, and I'm not trying to dog Arians whatsoever. I like Bruce. Bruce is the best coach the Bucks have had since Gruden, since Chucky, and I think his assistants are pretty darn good. Leftwich, we'll see. I don't know how much.
I like Bruce, the way some players improved as the season went.
Absolutely. I love the way the defense was molded, although I have reservations. I don't want to get sucked in like what happened with Mike Smith in 2016. I just think this is the best coaching staff the Bucks have had in a long, long time. Having said that, and this is not, I'm not slurping Jameis here. I'm just throwing this out there. Everybody's giving Arians credit, you know, for the offense clicked last year. You can hate Jameis as much as you want.
That
the offense
28
clicked.
Points, Lee.
The offense clicked. They scored points. They threw for yards. They scored touchdowns. The offense clicked. And, you know, Arians is getting a lot of credit for that. He fixed the offense. Okay, great. Jameis had 30 picks. Have you heard anyone say anything about Arians is even remotely responsible for that? Outside of Terry Bradshaw. He's the only guy that had said, hey, you know, what about Arians? He's throwing these picks. You're the coach. Coach him up. What's going on? There's an element of truth to what Bradshaw was saying in so many words. But you don't hear a word boo about Arians remotely responsible, even a little bit, for Jameis's picks. Do you think there's something to that?
Well,
I mean, don't you have to take the good with the bad?
There might be a fair point because, and I mentioned Carson Palmer, who had a lot of NFL experience by the time Arians got his mitts on him. He had already been to Cincinnati and Oakland, veteran quarterback, had some success. And the first half of the year under Arians, he's throwing picks all over the place. Now, that gets us back to those final two games.
Oh.
And if that didn't happen, we're not even having this discussion. So, that's what makes it so difficult.
And I'm constantly reminded of those last two games Jameis had.
And they only averaged 21 points those last two games.
Yeah. They're
well, thank you, Matt Gay, also.
Well, with those the last two games of Jameis, I hearken back to the press conference of Dirk Cutters after the Bucs got pounded by the Broncos. Jameis had a terrible game. And
is that the game in the rain when all the Bronco fans came down from the upper deck and were serenading the Broncos as they were putting the final touches on?
That game. And I'll never forget Cutter. I don't think he meant to say this when he said it. You know, he was in front of a microphone, so everybody heard it. He said, I thought we were past this. And I remember Arian said last year, roughly halfway through the season, when Jameis was on a good streak, Arian said it takes minimum of a half year for his quarterbacks to get a grasp of his offense. And he said, Jameis might be a step ahead. And then look how it ended.
I think that was the clear implication in Indy. I thought we were past this. I did. Lee, let's take a pause here to hear your sit down at the Combine with the esteemed D. Orlando Ledbetter of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. He's talking about where the Falcons stand in free agency and a whole lot more, including a true insider look at the roles of Dirk Cutter and Raheem Morris in Atlanta. You know, I got to give Ledbetter a little shout-out here, Lee. He's a good man. He's famous for wearing that bow tie. I don't know if he wore it at the Combine.
He works his tail off.
And he has no help.
He has
absolutely no help.
Yeah.
And the Falcons, are the big team in town with the Braves, maybe. Nobody cares about the Hawks. They don't have an NHL team. It's a good college town, obviously. But the Falcons are big. He has no help. You know, they're not the most open organization. McKay doesn't say much. Not much. Quinn's okay. Blank's okay.
Blank's open.
Dimitroff doesn't say much either. And he does a good job. So let's hear about your sit down over there. And Lee, may I ask whether when Ledbetter came by your table, you and Isbitz, with that big picture of me, did he say, where's the sage? Where is he?
Yeah.
Did he say it?
Yeah. He was hoping you would be there.
Did you enjoy your talk?
Oh, yeah. Daryl's a great guy. Great guy. He's been around the block a few times. Like I say,
Is he a former lawyer?
I don't know. I do know that he is a workaholic.
And where did he work before Atlanta?
Because he covered the Packers. Because I know he's a big John Lynch guy because he saw Lynch twice a year covering the Packers.
Nice.
And so he's a Lynch guy.
And you also talked, there was a conversation about the Hall of Fame too.
Yes.
Yes. So let's have our listeners get a little taste of the Orlando Ledbetter.
All right. Special guest, as promised on the Ira Kaufman podcast, Atlanta Journal-Constitution beat writer D. Orlando Ledbetter, the voice of the Falcons, as we like to call him. Thanks so much for joining us here on Radio Row.
Sure. No problem. Thanks for having me, guys.
It's the Ira Kaufman podcast without Ira Kaufman. We have to ask you up front, because got to understand, 7 years now, John Lynch, not in the Hall of Fame, and you are one of the esteemed voters and panelists. Ira takes a lot of crap around town in Tampa. People are trying to run him out of town because he can't get John Lynch into the Hall of Fame. It's really weighing on him. And we get a lot of folks who think Ira's lost his fastball. So you're in the room. We want to ask you, how does Ira present? What's your take on the Lynch situation?
Ira is one of the greatest presenters of my time on the committee, which I received my 10-year anniversary plaque this last year in Miami. So since I've been on the committee, Ira's delivered some of the best speeches ever. Certainly the Warren Sapp one, Derek Brooks one, and I think the John Lynch speech, he's enhanced it over time. So it's got nothing to do with Ira. It's got plenty to do with the fact that the safety position has been ignored. And looks like the committee has strategically jumped people in front of John that probably should have been taken care of a long time ago. And I'm talking about Kenny Easley, Atwater. That wasn't Ira's fault. That wasn't John's fault. He had to wait 16 years. So I think we put four safeties in, and they keep bringing John back to the room. So they keep bringing him back because they're going to put him in one day. Now, I thought certainly next year would be perfect. He's in Tampa. I saw John yesterday and told him, hey, John, congratulations on the Super Bowl season. And I just want you to know I'm still working on your behalf with Ira to get you in because I believe he belongs in the Hall of Fame.
Nice. Nice defensive, Ira. And I just wanted to get that out of the way up front. I listen to the Bowtie Chronicles. I'm a big fan.
Yay.
And I encourage everyone else to listen to it. You just move it through nice. It's so easy to listen to. So I got to give hats off to that. It's not as easy as it looks, and it's certainly as easy as you make it sound.
I'm not sure how many of our listeners know this, Daryl, that you were an NFC Central beat writer. So you saw Lynch in his prime when you covered the Packers.
Right, no question about it. That's why I was an early on supporter of John. I was there for that whole thing covering Brett Favre and the Packers and Warren Sapp slapping him upside the head and them talking. It would be some of the best sidebar stories was coming over to get Sapp and just what he was talking to Brett Favre about. I would come and spend a week down in Tampa to when the team, I think Sapp, like, busted through against the 49ers and busted them up, and then Al Stott was hammering people. So Tampa Bay was on my radar screen for much of the 90s, and to see that rise, I knew from very early on, it was about the middle of that defense, starting up front with Warren and Derek Brooks, and then John running everything on the back end for the cover two. So just a great football player who hit with veracity and did it in a clean way. So
that's interesting. He hard hitter but clean.
Yeah, so I want to see that in Canton someday. I want my kids to be able to go see that in Canton.
That's interesting. A lot of times you think about the hard hitters are guys that push the envelope. I love Ronnie Lott to death, but he kind of pushed the envelope a little bit.
Yeah, Jack Tatum, but the rules are different.
Yeah.
Chris Hamburger came in, and they put on his highlight tape when he was coming in as a senior committee. And, that tape would be some issue from Goodell's office to say, this is what you don't do. You can't clothesline people, Chris.
Someone put this on Twitter. I saw it. I don't know if you did. This a couple months ago. It was maybe 1982, 83. It was the opening scene for NFL Today. Musburger and those guys.
Oh, yeah.
And, it was like the music and the clips. All but one of those clips would be outlawed today in the NFL. They showed guys getting stomped on, clotheslined, you name it. And that was celebrated back then.
Oh, yeah. I know as a kid growing up, one of my good – football memories going up in Cleveland is when Joe Turkey Jones slammed Terry Bradshaw on his head.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah.
The pile drived him, yeah. but Bradshaw came back in that game, I think, and still won it. But
no tent. No concussion tent back those days.
I used to run in the tunnel and run back out.
You get the smelling salts and come back at it.
Smelling salts, right.
Yep.
Now, through the year, Ira, to let you know, is a good friend of Rich McKay. They actually have, Ira stays at his house. Yeah. I don't know if I would let Ira in my house, but he stays in Rich McKay's house. He knows Arthur Blank, who actually calls him Irv.
Irv, that's right, yeah.
That famous story where he said, hey, you look like an Irv, and I'm going to call you Irv. But Ira was certain that Dan Quinn was gone, and we all watched what happened from afar, but it almost felt like a historic set of patience from the coach and not necessarily the fans, and it paid off. How would you characterize for Bucs fans looking from afar the patience that was showed by the organization to bring Dan Quinn back?
If you look back in history, a lot of the old coaches wouldn't have made it in today's world. Chuck Noll, 2-12 his first season, wouldn't have got out of that first season now.
Landry.
Tom Landry. It takes a while to get your system in. But Dan had his system in. It was his fifth year, with a high-priced roster. So if you're going to bring somebody in to handle that roster, you're going to have to tear it all the way up. So they felt the best way to move forward was try to go off of that 6-2 ending with the person who's responsible for building this roster and fixing it and tweaking it and getting the coaches in the right places to move forward. Yeah, they've made some mistakes, Big Beasley, and so forth. And you know, once you make a mistake, you got to get rid of it. I learned that from Ron Wolf. You can't compound your mistakes by keeping people around that can't help the football team. So they've been guilty of that in the past. A lot of teams have. No big deal there. But they just felt Dan Quinn was the guy to move this team forward as opposed to starting over from scratch with a 35-year-old quarterback and a 31-year-old wide receiver.
Well, in case you just fast-forwarded, we're here with D. Orlando Ledbetter, Atlanta Journal-Constitution beat writer. And definitely rewind, because he had some really cool stuff to say about Ira and the Hall of Fame and the John Lynch situation. Wanted to ask you about Matt Ryan. We, you know, Bucs fans look at the landscape. You know, Cam Newton's uncertain. Drew Brees was very uncertain until a couple of weeks ago, and maybe this is his last year. How much longer do you think Matt Ryan has to go? Is he a five-year guy, a three-year guy, a seven-year guy left? Where do they stand there?
Yeah, I think I'm checking in at 38, you know, that was the Eli number, to see if he can keep going. That would be with a year to go in the contract. So you're pretty much in for 35, 36, and 37. Probably got to make a determination there. Do you draft his successor at 37, or do you start looking, or do you keep going? He certainly said he wants to keep playing the technology and the physical training and regimen and so forth, or that we're seeing guys play longer. But Philip Rivers, 38, looked like the Chargers said, hey, that's
end of the 38 line.
Seems like Eli's 38 seems like the check-in number to me.
Gotcha. Interesting. Three or four more years, Lee. So, yeah. You know, unless he turns into the freak Tom Brady, Drew Brees scenario.
No, like Darryl said, with technology and medicine, you know, now playing quarterback at 40 is almost expected, almost.
Yeah, I don't really, you know, what the wave of the new quarterbacks now, I want to hop on that train right now. I don't really want a 40-year-old pocketbook guy right now.
Well, that's a good point. A lot of these guys, those beatings, they add up. Look at Cam Newton.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Cam Newton's about shot physically because he's taking a toll.
Yeah, no question about it. And I think that we haven't followed the model of Randall Cunningham. Randall Cunningham came in running, developed into a passer, started throwing the ball down the field in Minnesota. These running guys, Vic developed a little bit. We missed him because of, you know, his transgressions. But Andy certainly had him reading and throwing, which is what he could have been had he been there the whole time. But, some of these other – RG3 didn't last. Vince Young didn't last. I mean, it's a lot of running quarterbacks over there in the quarterback graveyard that wouldn't learn how to read defenses or learn how to work through their progressions at a speed enough to keep them in the league. So, we're seeing guys that could run and do that now, and that might be the wave of the future.
And looking to the future, Vic Beasley – he's gone. I remember when I first saw you wrote a suggestion that you broke down the whole roster and sort of said goodbye Beasley, and then he was cut maybe 3 days later, 2 days later. So I enjoyed that. We wrote that up. Do you think he's shot, or does he just need a change of scenery? From a Bucs perspective, we're looking at maybe we lose Jason Pierre-Paul, maybe we lose Carl Nassib, and Beasley's an athletic guy who might seem more suited to a 3-4. Or what do you think of him?
Yeah, he's a one-trick pony, outside speed, designated pass rusher. Pretty much a third one-down guy. Can't play a run. Then you got to drop him in coverage. He didn't want to do all that. So they were trying to make him play the Leo position, which is, you know, more of a linebacker. It's kind of the Bruce Irvin role. But folks started sitting on his speed. And he wouldn't come in to work with Coach Quinn in the offseason to work on change-up moves. So, you know, they just pushed him outside all the time.
Oh, wow, I didn't know that. So he wouldn't come in for extra work to expand his game.
Yeah, that was the big news last year at the Combine. Quinn said, we got to stop doing the same thing and getting the same results. I can't wait to work with him and get my hands on him and, work on his moves. because he was taking over defense last year heading in. And Big Beasley chose not to come to the offseason program.
Oh, okay.
And worked out with Bud Dupree 20 minutes away from the facility. So he didn't like being called out, and so he didn't show up.
Ouch. Could you imagine that, Lee? A guy working out 20 minutes away and doesn't want to come to OTAs? That's rough.
That's bad.
And they gave you $12.3 million on your fifth-year option.
And, of course, he had some money incentives probably for showing up a little bit, too. We got to hit you with the question of the Falcons and their pass rush. Do you think Jason Pierre-Paul is on the Falcons' radar? And what kind of priority is edge rusher for the Falcons in free agency here?
It's their number one priority. Only that's their only priority at this time, because letting Vic Beasley go, there's a gaping hole there, even though he wasn't very productive. Free agency and the draft are the main areas, but the Falcons are up against the salary cap, so they can't afford Jason Pierre-Paul. They can't afford Barrett or Noah. They have a relationship with Dante Fowler. Would he take $5-6 million do-good one-year deal to come and show? But he'd probably get more than that on the market. So they're in a pretty bad shape salary cap-wise, especially without the CBA being done. So their hands are going to be tied to get fixing things through the draft.
Our old pal Dirk Cutter, you saw him step away for 3 years and come back. Yeah, we got to know him very well. Was he a different guy when he came back? Do you think he was humbled? Do you think he was emboldened? What did you take on Dirk Cutter last year?
He kind of stood back and tried to find where he fit in that new new environment, new and different environment that, is up there now under Coach Quinn, as opposed to Coach Smith, where the team is, in a new stadium, marketing's important, they're not selling seats, fans are staying away. He's just trying to stay in his world and kind of like not make any noise and do his job. So it's kind of subdued, humbled a little bit, and he got a shot at it, to be the head guy down in Tampa. But he was comfortable and quiet.
Stayed in his lane a little bit.
Yeah, stayed in his lane a lot.
Got a question for you there.
All right, Lee.
You mentioned the fans. That marketing is really important now. They're trying to get fans to buy tickets. For a couple of years there, that was no issue at all. Even in the old stadium, it was an issue. Is that just America? What I mean by that is football's become, I say, more entertainment value at home with your big screens, cheaper beer, don't have to fight a crowd to go to the bathroom, all that, don't have to pay for parking. And if you look across the board, all sports, not just football, all sports, attendance is sliding. Mm-hmm. And the NFL, I think, had, the worst attendance in 15 years, something mm-hmm. like that? Mm-hmm. Is that just the way society's going? Is it not just Atlanta, or it's not just Tampa, it's just society?
Peculiar to Atlanta is the seat licenses.
Oh.
Yeah, the personal seat license. So people look at this as an investment. And so I'm like, whoa, that's the worst way to look at it ever. But that's what they were selling. So now these people are trying to get their money back off of their investment. And now all of a sudden they're not real happy with the Falcons because their investments are tanking. So winning will help all that. And then, but in Cleveland, if you're a fan, they still go to games.
That's true.
They got like 12 different, 20-some different quarterbacks since the Baltimore left, and they still go to the games because they're football fans.
Yeah.
They're not football investors. And so there's a difference. So, certainly the millennials, we'll blame it on them. They want to walk around looking at their phones and probably don't want to go to the game. I know the Braves games, they had to put a fence up or netting around the whole stadium because they're at the games on their phone the whole time.
Get hit in the head.
Yeah, get hit in the head.
But they're showing up like madmen for the soccer team. It's incredible
right,
what's going
yeah.
on there.
I'm not a big fan of minor league soccer, but it's working in Atlanta right now. And it's not Premier League soccer.
Sure.
They like it. And who's to throw rain on their parade?
40,000-50,000 a game is incredible.
Yeah, wow. The prices are a little different price point and
sure.
so forth. And I guess they've done a good job of putting a team together that's interesting to folks that like soccer.
All right, we are wrapping up here on the Ira Kaufman podcast with our special guest, D. Orlando Ledbetter from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, his podcast. Tell us where they can find the podcast.
The Bowtie Chronicles, it's on all the platforms, but on AJC.com or Atlanta Falcons News Now page on Facebook.
And I've never seen you without the bow tie, so this is a fascinating day for me personally. But it's not a game, so I get it.
Yeah, and I had it on yesterday because we were talking to Thomas Dimitroff and Dan Quinn. So big work day.
Got to wear the bow tie for the work tie. Exactly.
Yes, sir.
We need to dress better, Lee. We're just I got to get Ira in line too.
I know I freak people out once in a while. Maybe once every 2 years, when I have to wear a suit, like at a funeral, a wake, you know, I wear a suit and they're like, whoa. And I say, yeah, you know, when I have to get dressed up, I can. I'm just too much of a lazy slob.
Last question for you, Raheem Morris. Now, we've talked about this on the podcast for
he's
a while.
Hosed.
How does Raheem Morris not get an interview for a head coaching job? And, you know, he spent 3 years with the Bucs. He had their best season in recent memory, 10-6 in 2010. Mm-hmm. He's obviously worked on both sides of the ball now, different defenses. Rondé Barber told us before this past season that Raheem does want the job. He would like to be back in the head coaching ranks. It's just not working for him. Mm-hmm. I talked to Mike Tomlin at the last owners' meetings, and he got all heated when I asked him this question.
Yeah, he got
question.
Emotional with you, right?
Yeah, very emotional with me. And this was in the, you know, in the pretty fancy courtyard in Arizona, mm-hmm. and not at the table.
Okay.
And I asked him about this, and he's basically strongly implied that it's race. That's why Raheem can't get an interview. What's your take? And you've been around Raheem now a couple of years in Atlanta.
Yeah, I think, you know, some of it is when I bring it up to him, because I'm thinking when he goes over to offense, I'm like, well, hey, is this so you can, you know, add to your resume as a, you know, learn how to be the coordinator? I expect him to learn how to call plays and so forth over there, but that wasn't the case. I think he was over there to spy on Shanahan for Dan. But so that wasn't it. He didn't really come off that was something he really wanted to do. It's like, kind of, if it happened, fine, but I'm not gonna beat my own drum about it. So you know, him coming in and saving the Falcons season and their defense last year is another feather in his cap. If something goes haywire this year, we fully expect him to be the interim. Maybe that puts him back.
Wow.
And even if they don't, if things go great, then he's got right,
yeah,
right, like
yeah,
right
yeah.
in.
Yeah.
Saved the franchise. So he's going to be back out there around. I think he might have got the Tampa job too young. And then now he's more seasoned, still can coach, still, you know, can do his thing. So I think, you know, maybe his time's still going to come around. But, I mean, there's some guys like Keith Armstrong, that Terrell Austin, guys that, you know, African-American candidates that couldn't get interviews because, you know, and nobody wants to say it's race, but it's a shifting target, you know, with regards to the hiring practices
sure.
of the billionaire owners of the National Football League.
I'll say this about Raheem, and I've written this several times. You know, we're 10 years removed now from the 2010 season mm-hmm. when he got the Bucs to 10 wins.
Mm-hmm.
You look at that team, specifically, if you look at that roster, mm-hmm. how the heck did he get 10 wins? Should have had 11. He got hosed out of 11 against Detroit. I don't know if you know this about him, but Kellen Winslow was called for pushing off when he was clearly interfered with. They took a touchdown off the board. Mm-hmm. They lost in overtime to the Lions. Mm-hmm. That would have been 11th win. They would have made the playoffs.
Yeah.
But if you... the farther we get away from that 2010 season, you look at that roster, like, how in the world did you pull this off?
Yes. Yeah, so,
and
so.
Even still, I mean, Styles White, that was like your best defensive end. Styles White. Yeah.
Yeah, that year, I think it was 9 or 10 rookies.
But Greg made... Styles White.
Yes.
Did he change
yes,
his name
yes.
on it?
Don't
yes.
call him Greg after
Hell
he
yeah,
changes
no.
it. He got very very upset with the Greg thing.
Gina McCoy was a rookie. And matter of fact, he was hurt that year.
Mm-hmm.
He blew out his pec, didn't he?
Gerald McCoy?
No,
he played most of the season.
Most
not,
of the
not
season.
Not the whole
okay.
season, but most of the season. All right, well, gosh, thanks so much for joining us here on Radio Row, taking out of your time, and we'll tell Ira that you put in the good word for him.
All right, thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Our thanks to D'Orlando Ledbetter for sitting down. Great interview, I thought. Very insightful, and I was not joking. His Bowtie Chronicles podcast is an excellent listen if you like the NFC South. And he's very straightforward, very easy to listen to, even though he's got that wacky voice, which is a lot of fun. But hey, that's one of the reasons we love Ira, because you can't miss that voice. Ira is coming up back now to talk a little Teddy Bridgewater and more. We thank Bill Curry Ford, who presents all of Ira's work at joebucksfan.com, billcurryford.com. Their March savings are rolling right now. Slam dunk savings, March mania, they call it. Get to BillCurryFord.com. Here's the sage.
Now, I heard there's a lot of chatter about Teddy Bridgewater. A lot of chatter. First thing I want to know from you, if Teddy Bridgewater was this good of a quarterback, were the Jets that bound and determined to draft that USC quarterback? Is that why they let him go? I mean, if he's that good of a quarterback, teams don't let go of a good quarterback.
You know, it's a little mysterious. He put in a full season in Minnesota. He went 11-5.
And they had that awful injury.
He went 11-5.
Yeah.
You know, they had a good team around him, but they're not they weren't spectacular.
Good defense, good running game.
The guy's accurate. Like, he throws a nice short ball within 20 yards. He doesn't throw a lot of picks. Not ultra mobile. I'm not sure he's got more mobility than Winston. Who I still say Winston is more of a pocket presence guy than anybody thought coming out of Tallahassee. They thought he was dead in the water.
Oh, okay.
Dead meat.
Here's his
now he gets sacked. He does get sacked, but he also avoids a lot of sacks. You know, you gotta give that. And he buys time. He's not Patrick Mahomes, but he buys time.
Yeah.
So Bridgewater, the key is, what does Arians think about him? Does he, you know, maybe we're making too much about fitting into Arians' scheme. Maybe he thinks other people that he could mold people into this scheme. Maybe Bridgewater hasn't had the emphasis on throwing the long ball. So how do you know he can't?
Yeah, because Mike Zimmer didn't throw a lot. Know,
there's not a lot of tape on Bridgewater throwing deep. There's not. What's Arians going to do? Have him in for a private workout? I mean,
well,
yeah, you never know.
Why not? Yeah,
but he's healthy, as you said. Mm-hmm. He's healthy. He went 5-0, you know, with a very good Saints team. Mm-hmm. But it's also, I don't know if the word's disturbing, but it's again mysterious, because the rumor is that this Taysom Hill, who you can't believe that Sean Payton is that high.
I think that's just...
There's some talk that he's getting a franchise tag. What is going on with Payton and this guy?
That is such misdirection. I don't believe that.
No. I don't believe it till it happens.
No.
I don't believe it.
That guy's not worth 27. I mean, you talk about... People say Jameis...
He's a little Swiss Army knife.
Yeah, people say Jameis isn't worth 27 million. This guy sure as hell isn't worth 27 million.
You know, I like him on my team. But I don't want the guy throwing 36 passes.
If this guy was as good as Sean Payton claims he is, like I said, I think it's a baloney.
He would have told Breeze to hang him up.
Or he would have traded him for like 3 first-round picks. If I remember correctly, didn't Sean Payton blow up Ryan Griffin too? Oh, I'm so awful. I'm upset that I lost him. The guy acted like he was Joe Montana Jr.
You know, one guy we don't talk about much is Newton. And... I'm not convinced the Panthers are all in on Cam Newton.
He's coming back.
I'm just not convinced that they're not going to draft the quarterback. I'm not convinced they're not going to draft the quarterback or make a deal for a Bridgewater. Newton might have worn out his welcome. Would a Gruden be interested in Newton?
Yeah.
If he's healthy?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Would Arians? I don't think so.
He's got a big arm.
He's got a big arm, but
the legs are gone.
I think the key to Newton's effectiveness is that dual threat as a runner. And if that's gone, which it might be, he's all beaten up. And if he's not that kind of a threat, and he's just got to worry about him as a pocket passer, I think he's kind of average.
The fact that Newton's beat up, and he's a big dude, we're not talking about some skinny guy, is that a bad omen for Lamar Jackson? Because Lamar Jackson's not big like Newton.
I think so. There's a reason a lot of people don't think Lamar Jackson can sustain this in this league, playing the way he does.
Mm-hmm. So that's why the sirens are going off.
You know, now look, I was in Baltimore for that game against Tennessee. He took a beating. Titans beat him up. Jarrell Casey got some good licks on him. He didn't play particularly well. They abandoned the run game very early. They panicked a little bit.
Mm.
I think he ended up throwing 50 balls. Now, that's not the Ravens' offense.
No, Lee. It's not.
That is absolutely...
Panic is the right word.
One thing, Lee, that you'd be curious about this. This came in the email the other day. No, it didn't come from Holly Saunders. No, it did not. But I got an email from the Hall. It's time for another vote. Now, we're not voting for the Hall of Fame. You know what we're voting for? All decade. It's all decade time.
Yeah.
And they sent me a ballot. And it was a big ballot, and I think a guy had to make one Pro Bowl to be listed on the ballot.
Okay.
And that's fair.
Yeah.
You don't make one Pro Bowl in 10 years, I'm not putting you on the team.
Yeah.
And the way they broke it down, now look, they do it the way they want to do it. There were like 6 linebackers. And then they had a 6 linebackers on the second team. That's 12 linebackers. Well, I looked over the list, you know, and of course you got Keekly, you know, and then some other guys. But
yeah, Keekly's no brainer.
I looked at the 6 guys and I said, Levante David belongs on this list. He belongs on it.
Only one Pro
Bowl. Now, you had DeMarcus Ware. You had Terrell Suggs. Different types of linebackers.
Yeah. You know, Levante's stats are right up there with Keekly.
Levante Day, and I think he started, he played almost a whole decade.
Yeah.
I think he started, what, in 2012?
Yes.
Yeah. I voted for him in the first team. Now, we also picked.
Was he on the ballot?
Yeah, he was on the ballot.
Okay.
I think we picked 4 wide receivers and then 4 for the second team. I don't think I put Evans on the first team, but I put him on the second team.
Okay.
You got Antonio Brown, even with his craziness. He was the best.
Oh, my gosh. For a couple years there, yeah. No question about it.
Julio.
Yeah.
Julio. Now, part of Evans' problem is he started in 14. So, you know, he missed the first beginning of the decade. That always hurts you a little bit in terms of numbers, you know, throughout the decade. Calvin Johnson had some big years from 2010 to 2014, mm-hmm. 2015. For about 3 years, he was the best receiver in football.
And with lousy quarterbacks, too.
And with lousy quarterbacks. You got DeAndre Hopkins.
Yeah.
You know.
You're right up there with Evans.
So, it's not like, and Gerald McCoy at defensive tackle.
Now, you know Bucs fans are going to go bananas.
They can go bananas all they want, but
did you vote for him?
I think I put him on the second team.
Okay.
I put him on the second team. You know, he's no Aaron Donald.
And by the way, there's rumor out there, I guess you could say it was floated by Jeremy Fowler of ESPN. He claimed it was like buried in a story, one sentence. So the Bucs have been interested in re-upping David.
How many people are they going to re-up over here? Well, I mean, yeah, you got Godwin's ahead of them.
Well,
yeah, you know.
When I first read that, first thing I thought of, if the new CBA is agreed upon, then you got money to play with.
Yeah. You know, Lee, I'm going to end the podcast like this with a little tone of regret, Lee. A little
note. Well, I was going to ask you about Levante David.
I'll do a little David and a little tone of regret. David is a tremendous teammate.
Mm-hmm.
He's a hell of a mentor for young Mr. White. Hell of a mentor.
Arians loves him.
And he's still a very good football
player. Oh, yeah. Arians loves him. Loves him.
Arians loves him.
So did Shiano.
You know, in his own way, he's a leader. And he became more of a leader, vocal leader, the last year or two.
Yeah.
And I think Arians has leaned on him for that.
Ah.
So is Bowles.
How much does it hurt Levante David that he's been on the worst NFC team of the decade?
Hurts him terribly. You mean nationally? Yeah, hurts him terribly. I think he probably would have made 4 Pro Bowls. But yeah. You got Bobby Wagner. Excellent. I'm not saying David's better. Yeah, Seattle's a high-profile team.
Yes, exactly, exactly.
They're always on
TV.
Now my tone of regret, Lee, and we don't think about this enough.
I told you to get the hand sanitizer,
but,
Ira.
Lee, you know, the first 4 years of Winston, not so much last year because he made $20 million. But damn it, Lee, those first 4 years before that fifth-year option was picked up, he was making peanuts, relatively speaking.
That's when you should have
And that's where they needed to make hay.
Absolutely.
And it didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Buck fans cry themselves. That's why they're going to Big Stone Brewery to drown their sorrows in a Bramosa. And, Lee, we're out of here, but we'll be back later in the week.
Any tips for your readers, your listeners, about the coronavirus? What should they do?
Be sensible. Don't panic and think Bucks. Go Bucks.